like to call the public hearing to order. The purpose of this hearing is to take testimony on the district's proposal to change the designation for the use of the school holidays, Veterans Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Abraham Lincoln's Birthday, Casimir Pulaski Day, and Columbus Day, allowing the district the option of holding regular school with student attendance or to schedule teachers' institutes, parent-teacher conferences, or staff development activities, including school improvement and in-service training. Public Act 96-640, which was enacted on August 24, 2009, amended the Illinois School Code 105 ILCS 5/24-2 so that districts are no longer required to request a waiver from the Illinois State Board of Education to use certain school holidays for purposes other than a holiday. However, to use any of these school holidays for purposes other than a holiday, the district must still hold a public hearing and have board approval. Once this is done, the provision is valid forever or until the school code is changed. Notice of tonight's hearing was published in the Gatehouse Media Suburban Newspapers, which is the Suburban Life Publications, and written notice was sent to both educators and parents. Board action on this proposal is scheduled later in the evening during the regular meeting. Are there any members of the public who wish to comment on the district's proposal? Hearing none, the public hearing is now closed. So we will immediately start our regular board meeting. So, Mrs. Nelson, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure. Well, I have a hard time.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood? Mrs. Nelson?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Soler?
Here.
Mr. Von Rick?
Here. Okay, at this time we have public participation. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time?
I'm going to speak to you tonight about something I've already written to Ms. Reback about, some concerns about a rumor that's going around town about the elimination of the Rising Stars program at Hadley. My daughter is involved in both this and the musical theater arts program. Although we certainly stress academics first in our house, extracurricular activities are a big part of the school experience in Glen Ellyn. For many, this means sports, as witnessed by our huge park district and travel sports programs. But for some, sports, especially by grade 6, have become very competitive and exclusive, so there is no room for them. Or by this age, they have decided to take on an artistic activity to add to their sports program. I could go on and on, as most mothers do, about how much Avery has enjoyed Rising Stars and how this close-knit group of 65, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders has made her first month at Hadley not so overwhelming. The fact of the matter is that she has learned a lot about music and takes very seriously the rehearsal and performance process. I can tell you that I was not even aware Hadley had a chorus or a choir. Whether this is a marketing issue on the music department's part or ignorance as a new parent at Hadley on my part, I never heard a word. I would obviously welcome Hadley Competitive Show Choir through the school's music program if it existed, but it does not. The rumor that a grievance was filed by a teacher through her union was confirmed by Ms. Reback's email response to me, which stated, quote, the decision regarding Rising Stars will be based on various factors that are related to our collective bargaining agreement. I am eager to learn more about the process and where parents and students are able to participate in such bargaining. If our only place to do so is through our board members in a meeting like this, then I urge the elected school board officials to represent those of us who support this program fully in that arena. Do the teachers decide what goes on in our buildings after school hours, or do you, the school board and the superintendent? Obviously, if Rising Stars moves out of Hadley, my daughter will just join their group elsewhere. The students in Rising Stars will not automatically join chorus just because you remove them from the building. In fact, the ill will alone on this issue already has people upset with the music, with the Hadley's core staff. Such decision would prove an already commonly shared belief that some of the teachers in our district are not interested in what parents and students want, or even what is a proven success story. Instead, a cut off your nose to spite your face scenario occurs, leaving no one happy. On an economic note, I find it hard to believe the district and school board would turn away a program that literally cost them nothing, just to satisfy the hurt ego of an educator who did not get the turnout she wanted for an after-school program. MEF funds are already allocated for Forest, so the financial backing is in place. Why, then, the grievance? Lastly, I ask for clarification if other programs, such as Girl Scouts, Chess Club, and Project Brainwave, that also use District 41 facilities are also in jeopardy. Thank you for your time on this matter.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kate Miles, and I am a sixth grade member of the Hadley Show Choir. I understand that you are considering the fate of our show choir, and that's why I'm here. I'd like to tell you a few things about Hadley Show Choir. It's a serious source of musical education. It isn't just fun and games. There are many of us who want to pursue music in high school, college, and maybe even in our career. The Rising Stars directors teach us so much about music, performing, and the hard work and discipline that it takes to be successful. I wouldn't be here right now if it weren't for the Rising Stars directors. I started going to their camps when I was four, and they have helped me discover my passion. They are also very supportive of other music programs at Hadley, like the band, orchestra, and other choirs. They have introduced us to Mr. Jeffrey at Glombard West and encouraged us to watch and learn about the Glombard West music programs that are coming our way. They are helping us to pursue music and performing and to have a musical passion, also how to follow our dreams. Show Choir has given me a home at Hadley, a place where I've made so many new friends, a place where 6th, 7th, and 8th graders can all come together to create one team. Many of us don't play basketball or volleyball or soccer. We sing and dance, and Hadley Show Choir is our team. The Rising Stars directors are our coaches, and this is our sport. When this team started, they weren't even sure they had 28 kids to make it work, and they had 65 show up. We practice together, we compete together, We've already had success together. In a short period of time, our team has brought pride to Hadley Junior High, and our team is still very proud of that. I don't know much about how these groups work together: PTA, the Musical Education Foundation, the Teachers Union, Hadley Show Choir, and the school board. But it seems to me that no one is looking out for our team. Who's going to support our kids? Who's going to support our team? Is going to encourage our musical dreams. The show choir is very important to us kids. I'm here to ask the District 41 School Board to please support our team. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.
Anyone else morning?
No.
Okay. Okay, at this time, we will move to recognition.
We want to take this opportunity this evening to recognize our buildings and grounds staff and the custodial staff at each of our buildings for the outstanding, distinguished job that they did during the recent blizzard, the amount of time and sacrifice, both personally and professionally, that was required in order to get our buildings ready and open for that Friday after the storm. It was just phenomenal. And so I want to give credit to the entire buildings and grounds and introduce Bob Cicerella, who is the leader of that group, and allow him to say a few words about some of the specifics that the men put in, the hours they put in round the clock in order to get us ready to go. And Bob, thank you for your leadership and your following of them and staying with them during this ordeal.
Well, it was a pleasure. I would like, there's three gentlemen that are here with us. There are others that I'm going to mention, able to make it, maybe work here, whatever. But this gentleman right here, we have Coco Frico. Mike Sarah and Ilya Makovec. And I would just like to tell you that a couple weeks ago on a Tuesday afternoon about 3 o'clock, we had a storm blow in the town, as I'm sure everyone's aware of, and it didn't stop until sometime on Wednesday. And I call them my guys, but they're all of our guys. They work round the clock, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I remember driving past Churchill about 3:30 in the morning thinking, well, if they haven't made it to Churchill, I'm in trouble. Well, as it turns out, at 3:30 in the morning, they were already at Churchill, and by 7:25 in the morning, that building was completely cleared, ready, and ready to open. These three gentlemen, along with a whole crew of people that I'm going to mention briefly right here, did a fantastic job for our community, for our kids, for our staff, and I would just like to say thank you very much for all of your efforts. Just sincerely, sincerely appreciate it. Ed Maylap, I don't know if anybody of kids that had me probably work in Kakowski, who's the building manager over there. And then I may do damage to some of these things, but I'll do the best that I can. Jersey Deli, Kristar, Georgi, Palum, Vitasek, Mike Peters, Mark Henry, Fotos Baholi, Benny Lochi here at Lincoln, and then at Churchill we have Nico Pareja. We have Chico Carrano. All of those gentlemen work virtually around the clock for us at getting our buildings open. I, again, would just like to say thank you to all of them. And we have a pen of appreciation for those folks that are here tonight.
We actually have our vision pin because we believe that you have inspired the excellence that we would expect from all of District 41, and you have demonstrated your commitment to all of us and to putting children first and safety. So
thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The torture isn't over yet.
Bob, I have a little gift. I was at the dollar store, so I thought that I would do a little extra. You can have it in your office and just every once in a while pat each other on the back with it. So I'll give that to Bob to pass on. Thank you.
And we certainly would invite you to stay for the whole meeting if you like, but we know that you still have some rest probably you want to catch up on.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, next up we have our presentations, reports, and initiative updates. We have a Lincoln School presentation today.
We have two presentations this evening. We're going to begin with Lincoln, and I'll introduce Shannon Cross, principal of Lincoln, and she is here with her usual team of presenters to share part of the Lincoln story.
I'm Shannon Cross, principal of Lincoln, and I'm very happily joined by Linda Schweighofer, my assistant principal, Linda Stanhoff, Kim Merritt, literacy specialist, Claudia Roots, Kathy Coomer, and Denise Casanegro, all ELL teachers here at Lincoln School. Our outcomes for this evening that we hope that the board and all of our visitors here at Lincoln tonight walk away with, although we are explicitly highlighting the instructional changes and alignment that we're making, we hope that you all listen, see, hear, and learn the implicit journey that we're on in meeting the unique needs of our refugee students. So our outcomes are to share both the journey of our refugee students and our school's journey in meeting their unique needs, highlighting pieces of where we are in our journey towards aligning and providing seamless and continuity in literacy instruction, for our refugee students from the ELL classroom to the general ed classroom, provide data and illustrate how these changes have positively affected student achievement and individual growth in literacy, and then to celebrate, most importantly, the work of our students, families, and staff in our vision of achieving high level of learning for our refugee students in reading within a professional learning community. So, one of the very first things we want to share with you is what the journey is like for a refugee and their family.
There are an estimated 11.4 million refugees that we know of in the world today.
There are an additional 24 million people attempting to flee their homeland. The United States resettles between 50 and 80% of those being resettled.
The average stay in the refugee camp is 5 years.
Refugee camps are basically holding centers. They're closely guarded and surrounded by barbed wire.
Each year, approximately 80,000 refugees and 1 million immigrants come to the U.S. in hope of a better life.
A refugee is a person who has been pushed or forced to leave his country and cannot go back.
An immigrant is a person who leaves their own country to go another country to live.
I did not choose to come to America, but I was forced to come to America because of war.
I like my home, but I have to leave because my husband was here.
In one capacity or another, both immigrants and refugees leave the place they once called home.
Missing my homeland is a problem for me because that's peace of mind, but it's not a place like home.
I realized just how much territory was uncharted as a foreigner, just how overwhelming it can be.
It didn't take me long to understand the kind of life that these individuals left behind. I could see it in their faces.
My name is Zumomo. I'm from Sudan. I am a refugee, a World Relief staff member, and a pastor of Sudanese Church.
My name is Mike. I am from Wheaton, Illinois, and I am a volunteer with World Relief DuPage.
My name is Marilena. I'm from Guanajuato, Mexico, and I am an immigrant.
My name is Lissa. I'm from Naperville, and I started interning with World Relief Aurora 4 years ago, and it significantly changed the course of my life.
My first week in the USA was a nightmare. I felt alone and unprotected.
They got here on Halloween day, and it was horrible for me, so I'm seeing those images around me. So for my background, it looks to demonic for me, and even for my wife, it was shocking. She kept on telling me, see that and look at that. And it was a really bad experience for us to get here on that day.
When we arrived, it was winter, and the heat did not work. Para mantener la temperatura más o menos tibia, tuve que poner a hervir agua sobre la estufa y esa noche tuve que dormir con mi hija en brazos para mantenerla tibia.
No matter where a refugee or immigrant comes from, they have to completely start over from scratch. A new life, a new home, a new job, a new language.
When our team of volunteers arrived at the airport to pick them up, we could see the uneasiness on their face. But then when they saw us holding the sign, and the smiles on the volunteers' faces, we could see some relief on their face.
I was really welcomed. I met a lot of people who came even to the airport to pick me up. I felt secure, filled with peace, safety as well. It was a joyful experience.
Then when we brought them back to the apartment, there was a small group of Chin Burmese waiting for them. They had actually been waiting there all day, and they had a hot meal waiting for them, and we could see even more relief on their faces.
And I had the World Relief staff who had been always there whenever I run into a problem, even if I'm not able to fix it, we call the office and somebody comes over to help.
One of the challenges we had was for them to really express what their needs were. So we could leave their apartment thinking they're okay, but we would really have to probe with questions like, do you have a ride to work tomorrow? Do you have enough food in the fridge?
My impression of how it would be to be a newly arrived refugee or immigrant in America is that it's absolutely exhausting.
The most difficult part of my initial settlement.
That's just a little bit of insight on what it's like for a family. Now we want you to meet our kids.
My name is Wahida. I'm from Thailand. My name is Kayman. I'm from Kelly.
My name is Freddie. I'm from Burma.
Good. How did you and your family feel when you found out you were coming to America?
Feeling good.
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 It was fun.
Fun? Why good, Wahida?
Because we don't know America yet. First year we come, we liked the school.
And why good, Kayman?
My mom, dad like America.
And Freddy, why fun?
Because there's lots of playgrounds to play.
Oh, good. What was school like in your country?
Bad.
Bad, okay.
Bad.
But things were different.
Things different is in Thailand, the teacher is not kind of, teacher is not nice. America teacher is really nice, that's why.
Jimmy, what was different?
Read a book.
Okay. Buddy?
There's no playground to play in game.
What do you like about school here?
Read a book is good.
Okay.
And you can get more friends. You can meet teacher, a lot of teachers.
What's your favorite subject?
My favorite subject is math.
Yeah. What's your favorite subject?
I don't know.
Okay. Buddy, what's your favorite subject?
Math.
And what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be, if I grow up, I'm going to be like Miss Cup.
Okay. What do you want to be when you grow up?
Fred.
Okay. And Fadiq?
Fadiq.
Okay, good.
My name is Raz. I'm from Nepal.
My name is Susmita. I'm from Nepal.
How did you and your family feel when you found out you were coming to America?
That's good. For my family said this America is so good. I like this America.
Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they want to come here. They don't want to stay in Nepal.
They didn't want to stay in Nepal? Okay. What were you most looking forward to in America?
America is so good because I like America. The school is so good. I like Hadley also because Hadley, I have many friends in Hadley, and this school I have many friends in there.
Okay. Did you go to school in Nepal?
Yes, I go to school because this I have a lot of friends in this school fighting in Nepal and with me, and I'm don't fight. This school is so bad.
So in Nepal you had friends?
Yeah.
And did you fight with your friends in Nepal?
Yeah.
Okay. What was school like in Nepal? What kinds of things did you learn about?
I learned about in Nepal, I learned about how to write a song, how to look at song, and how to write it on handwriting to good. And like we learned in Nepal, I learned this on Nepal.
And Susmita, did you go to school in Nepal?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Like they teach us like 1, 2, 3, like those things, and like they gave us homework.
How is school in America different from school in Nepal?
Nepal is good and good. Homework teachers and a bit to the students. It's America, we are not doing homework, we are get after lunch or after school, and later we are doing homework and come back in home. I like American school because they're so good for me. I'm learned there many kinds of things in here. Many math long I learned in America.
Good answer. Susmita, how was school in Nepal different than school in America?
Like when we read and when we don't know how to read, and like they don't have us, they just read later. Read, like, yeah.
Or they do what?
See, you get a beat to the students.
Oh, the teachers beat the students?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They don't do that in America. No. We make you stay in for lunch or after school, right? Yeah. What is your favorite subject in school?
Oh, my favorite subject is math.
And what's your favorite?
Math.
And what do you want to be when you grow up?
Well, I want to make a pilot, doctor, and everything. I like to make it a doctor or pilot. That's two I want to plan to make it. I will grow big up.
And Susmita, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Doctor.
Oh, another doctor. We have lots of doctors. Okay.
We told him, by the way, he could do both. He could be a doctor and a pilot. And on to our instructional journey. One of the things I noticed was we had silos in our instruction between general education and E&L. And people without information cannot act, but people with information cannot help but act. So our vision was to help remove those silos between general education and the E&L process. And we wanted to do that by developing a common understanding of best practices in balanced literacy instruction. As we know, our ELL teachers specialize in how to teach multilingual students and are the experts in best practices in ELL, not reading. And our literacy specialist expertise lies in the area of literacy. So we wanted to merge the two together and build the capacity and knowledge of transfer of that between knowledge and skills. We wanted to deepen that understanding and create continuity and alignment in teaching reading from the general ed classroom to the ELL classroom in order to better support our students. And we wanted to change the way we deliver instruction, as Mike Schmoker says, in order to improve kids' life chances.
So as we were talking about meeting the needs of this unique population, what we realized is that we were on a journey because a few years ago, we felt like we've used a metaphor of an island. Like we were all doing different things and out there kind of on our own and trying to meet the needs of these students. And so we began to work together, and we realized that we needed to be on the same page, and that meant collaboration with all of the people and the expertise that we had in our district and our school to be able to work together and to figure out how to best meet the needs of specifically these refugee students. So what we found is that within the school, we were working together with ELL teachers, classroom teachers, social workers, nurse, our after-school program, and the administrators in our building, summer school, and field trip experiences. And then to reach out to the homes, we were finding that we needed to have a better connection with these families. And so we began to do home visits on sick days, and parent education meetings, and it has really helped our parents to be able to understand better about the American school system and to become more involved. And then we also, reaching out to the community, our Glen Ellyn Resource Center is great, and going to the library and giving the kinds of experiences that our regular students have with their families that we're trying to help them. So also, we recently started a food bank program, which families will get in the after-school program every Thursday. They'll get healthy food to take home for the weekend. So those were some of the ways that we collaborate together.
We were empowered by knowing that we make a difference in the classroom with our children's literacy development, and so knowing that I had the privilege as literacy specialist in the building of partnering with our amazing English language learner teacher, our ELL teacher, and we came together, and in my opinion, it was, and it still is, one of the best experiences professionally I've had working within a true professional learning community with these ladies. We started working on several things together. We've been building the ability to use powerful assessments and tools and techniques to drive our instruction. We've translated information about student performance into instructional techniques that we can use with them. And we've begun to observe and respond to student learning with differentiated instruction. And so basically, we looked at what's happening in the classroom, we looked at what was happening in the English language learner room, and we wanted to make sure that there was alignment. Not only that they're receiving best instruction in both places, but when they move between those two entities, that it's seamless for them. These are some of our most vulnerable learners, our most struggling learners, and they deserve the most expert instruction and the most seamless experience as possible. You're about to see a few of our teachers in action in the classroom.
What's funny, Becca? What's funny too? Okay, we're sounding out. What else could you look at sounding out? What else is on the page to help us? Look at the picture.
Push.
Push.
And swing.
Well, what do you notice here at the end of it? What is that? Period. What does the period mean?
Period means it's done.
It's done. Stop it. Good.
Literally.
When? Oh, it's nice how you're looking at the picture to help you figure out that word.
Push.
I thought you say pull, and then you know it has an S-H. So you know it is. Push.
The moon was so bright, the boy saw a tree, the boy sleep. One day, the boy looked outside, it was morning, and he fly to the moon. He get to the moon, and he saw his mom and dad. He was so happy, his mom and dad was astronaut. His mom and dad was happy to see him too.
Lydia the mermaid only had a fish friend. She wants a human friend, but Lydia is a mermaid. Next day, Lydia the mermaid met the prince. But the prince has a friend. She is so mean to Lydia. The prince's friend name is Maya. Maya loved the prince's cell phone. The prince's cell phone had to marry his friend Maya. The prince cell phone come to Lydia's house. Lydia know that the prince is going to marry his friend. Lydia was so sad.
And I want you to put them into two categories for me, two groups. Okay, so what are our two groups?
He and
T-R.
Trash.
Train.
Any other T-R?
We have a lot of good ones up there.
Trick.
Ooh, that's a good one. It spells like truck, but it's trick.
I'm
going to
take that.
On page 7, Rose said, you have to go back to your pen. Say back.
Back.
Back. What letter does back start with?
Mary
Sue? What's the first letter of back? Can you point to the word back for me? I want you to run your finger under it and say it.
Back.
Very good. Rose said, Billy needs a bigger pen. Can you clap bigger for me? Two syllables. Mary Sue, can I see you clap bigger?
Bigger.
Two syllables. Is the pigeon going to drive the truck or not drive it? He's going to drive it. So, what are you going to put on this page?
The man is looking for the truck.
The man is looking for the truck. And it's not there.
Why
isn't the truck there? The pigeon took it. So are you going to work on a picture of the pigeon taking the truck here? Oh, I love that. That would really be nice for your story. And you really noticed too, look at that. That Moel uses speech bubbles to make his characters talk. Look at that. Look at your speech bubbles. What's your pigeon's name?
Can I have a ketchup?
Oh, she wants ketchup?
This pigeon.
She's looking for the pigeon? Okay.
And then
he came back. Oh, was she happy about that? Because she's been looking for him, right? So this is a girl who's looking for the pigeon. Okay. And then the pigeons come to the girl. And how could we work in that he's looking for ketchup?
In years past, we've had valiant efforts in working with our E&L students, but we didn't really meet their needs, as evidenced by some of their state and local assessments. They were showing growth, but not adequate growth. And so we really, you know, after visioning, came to alignment with our instruction. And now, in just a half a year's time, within this school year, our students, our refugee students, are showing tremendous growth. On the most recent math, many of them have either met their math target for the year, their spring math target in January, or they've exceeded them. And then another assessment that we commonly use is the Foundation Canal assessment, where the track readers basically from level A through Z, and our students are growing, and you're going to see, this is the moment you're going to join in our celebration of these students either exceeding on their math scores or moving along the Fontes and Snell continuum. So please join us as we celebrate. Just a 3 second
Oh,
what you need and we disappear. But our trains will be gone. Moon and the stars will follow the car. And then when we get to the ocean, gonna take a boat to the end of the world. All the way to the end of the world. Oh, and when the kids are old enough, we're gonna teach them to fly. You and me together could do anything. Not falling but rising like rolling around. Eyes closed above the rooftops. Eyes closed, we're gonna spin through the stars. Our arms wide as the sky, we're gonna ride the blue all the way to the end of the world.
Helping us video all the snippets. And just in closing, I'd like to end by sharing and expressing how proud I am of the work of the people that stand behind me. At times, the work has been very difficult to change, to relearn old practices, and to change the way that you teach. But they had trace faith and persevered, and it really paid off, and I'm honored to work with them.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I think my one comment, I think when we see videos like this, it helps to put into perspective what it means to be a district, and that the faces of the children in our district are not all the same, and they're not all the same kinds of learners. So thank you for reminding us of that.
Yeah, thank you for the letters. Their letters, thanks. It's a great
first book.
Their first book, yeah. This is great. Thank you so much.
Okay, next up we have our master facility plan recommendation from the Finance Committee. And Bob, our Finance Committee Chairman, I guess, will be reading this.
Sure. Anne, would you take it from here?
I'm going to begin, and Bob's going to take it from here. We have a PowerPoint that we'll get up just momentarily, but while we're waiting for that to come up, just to place a little bit of context around the presentation this evening and why a master facilities plan really came into being was April 2007 and a failed referendum. And at that time, we spoke as a board team and talked about the need to really go back to square one. That referendum failed so significantly was a very strong message from the community that we felt we couldn't build on that. We couldn't go back to that. So decided that a master facilities plan was going to have to come from the ground up. And that then led us to 2008 and the Master Facilities Steering Committee. And Bob was a member of that committee and has basically stayed with that process from the very beginning. So would you like to take it from there, Bob, and a little bit of history with the Master Facilities Committee?
Sure. Well, why don't we go to the next slide? This is kind of the history that Anne started. So in September 2008, we convened the MFP committee. There were staff members on board. There was two board members at the time. John Kenwood and myself were board representatives on that committee. And then there were members of the community involved as well. Some of them are here tonight, I noticed, walk in. And Jack Kaler was on that too, who subsequently became a board member. He was a member of the community at that time. So that committee was centered around sort of taking that visioning work that the board had done previously and looking at our facilities and trying to come up with options for our facilities to kind of meet that vision. There were things that committee, as well as our committee, you're always given sort of a set of parameters to work around. And so that committee took those parameters, did a lot of study into 21st century education, which is the running joke. We're 10 years into the 21st century, but we always talk about 21st century learning. Mm-hmm. But did a lot of investigation into facilities, what their needs are, different ways you can approach flexibility of space, what's really kind of what's required in modern facilities. Talk about outdoor education. We went down a lot of different paths and kind of coalesced all that different study into several options that were presented to the board back in March. And then our board, the current seven, came on board and we kind of took the committee's matrix of different options and sort of we all gave our feedback on those options. And between March 2009 and January 2010, we had a couple workshop meetings around it. And then in early 2010, the finance committee was tasked with kind of taking that next step and reviewing, with a more consistent and harder look at those options and recommending coming back to the board in January 2011, which we've pushed to February, with our recommendations around those next steps. So we started with the options that the MFP committee provided and took the comments that we had all as a board put together in that kind of year in between the MFP process and the Finance and Facilities Committee work. And started that as that was kind of the basis for our work, and then we kind of started with coming up with what are our criteria that all of our different options or whatever options we select need to meet. So this was sort of our step one is determining what's the goal of our work here, our long term vision for our facilities in the district, what do they need to meet? And these are the different points that we definitely wanted them to hit. Of course, we want to get rid of portables long term. Portables by definition are a temporary solution. So whatever long term option we selected had to include that piece of eliminating the portable classrooms. And that's based on an enrollment of 3,700, which is just a little bit more than what we've got now. And we kicked around the idea of, should we put a number on our elementary schools? And we decided to make our criteria, instead of a hard number on those, to really look at sections, because that's really how we as a district look at our schools when we're breaking out our numbers into classrooms. It's how many sections do we have in a building. So our target was four section buildings for the K through fives. We had to come up with a number. One of the things we struggled with was, our final option, what's what I call the red face test, what number can you put on this long-term option where beyond which it's you know, it's probably a great, it'd be an awesome facilities plan, but it's just unaffordable. So for that final option, we came up with the number of $100 million. That's not to say that, you know, you would go out to a referendum for $100 million, you know, immediately. That's a kind of a long-term vision of what this might cost over maybe several phases of work. And then also we have the 21st century learning environment. And really in relation to what we're looking at from a facility standpoint, the question is how does the 21st century learning environment manifest itself in the different facilities we're looking at? And what we found in the research, not just in the MFP committee, but also in the research that our committee did, was there's a, you know, a heavy emphasis on flexible spaces and also large and small group spaces. Not just regular ed and small group spaces, but even other spaces where you can have more than kind of the one classroom size involved, almost not to say the lecture hall like we're used to in college, but more spaces that where you're able to gather larger, not whole school, but maybe larger groups of students to teach to also. So one of the aspects of 21st century learning, where we see trends going, is more, almost more towards an individualized, correct me if I'm wrong, more of a individual learning, you know, a student-based individual learning environment. And that prompts more requirements for these small group spaces. We already see some of that in some of our differentiated learning in our small groups that we have in literacy, but we see a lot of education tending towards that. So those were sort of the design criteria for our different options. So starting with that, along with the the MFP committee produced a matrix of different options. There was sort of an A series and a B series, and to make the long story short, the A series is working with our existing five facilities, the four elementaries in Hadley. And then the B series was an additional, you know, adding an additional facility. And that's the broad view of that A series, B series. There were 15 options in the matrix that we as a board sort of looked at and gave our pros and cons and our feelings on it. And one of the tasks of the finance committee was to also consider other options that the Master Facility Plan Committee hadn't, in part due to the restrictions that were put on that committee. So we kind of expanded a little bit and thought a little bit more about the different options we could come up with, and so we added two other options. So at the end of the day, in our matrix, we have about 17 different options. The other two that were added were what I termed the large parcel options, and these are the options of a new building but on a new parcel of land, not necessarily owned by the district at this time. And it's not a particular piece of land. It's sort of a conceptual. It can be any large parcel piece of land, and we'll get to that again in the stay on this slide, Mike. We'll get to that again later on the short-term recommendations. So the first step in the process was kind of an initial screening of the different options. And that is to look at these 17 different options, compare them against our criteria, and see if we could screen any out with sort of a first pass, rough go at it, kind of a large mesh screen, as opposed to the finer mesh that we would approach with the final options. And in doing so, we removed a lot of the options based on the, for myriad reasons, but they're kind of summed up in these bullet points. Some of the options didn't reduce portables or didn't eliminate portables over time. So that option or options were eliminated. Some of the options did not really provide us with the flexible spaces that we needed for the 21st century learning environment. So those options were eliminated. Other options, now this third bullet, not all these options were necessarily the one thing that eliminated options. Many of the options that we screened out had two or three of these different bullet points on the cons list, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so some of the options were significant disruption to schools. Some of the options involved large-scale demolition and rebuilding at the different locations. And so we took that into account and what kind of effect that might have and how do we physically manage those crossover years during construction. Of course, the cost, the overall red face test costs, this maybe in some instances, the renovations involved in the different options, they weren't comprehensive enough to meet our needs. And some of the options require changes to the programs we delivered. And that was another criteria that it wasn't on the previous slide, but we also assumed our previous that our previous programs that we deliver would be maintained. Mm-hmm. So we weren't looking at options where you'd eliminate certain what people would call special programs or things like that. And then we also had some options that would make our elementary sites pretty large, 700, 800, size kids. So we did think there's some point where you're squeezing too many kids onto our small sites.
They become five or six sections.
Right, and they get away from the four-section target. After that kind of initial process, we had, I want to say we had one of the A options left over, and we had three B options left over. And so we gathered additional information, the overhead costs of operating another building. We looked at that. We also looked at just general construction costs associated with the different options and sort of the different the different options associated with each alternative. What would you do at Lincoln? What would you do at Franklin? We kind of had rough estimates. These are square foot times dollar per square foot numbers. They're not, they're not biddable documents by any stretch. They're rough cost estimates. And then we also had FGM produce some test fits for the Spalding site to confirm or throw out that option of potentially building at the Spalding site. In doing so, what we found was that A option, we eliminated the option of additions at each of our elementary buildings, and Hadley, of course, primarily because when you get to the point of the amount of destruction and reconstruction you would have to do at each location is so extensive in order to infuse the buildings with that flexibility portion that we're talking about, as well as just construct the additional classroom space that's needed. To do all that, by the time you do all that, it's more expensive significantly than if you were to build a new site at a green field, what we call green field construction, where you don't have to necessarily disrupt all the schools. You can build year-round. You don't have any restrictions on having to deal with kids in the school at the same time they're trying to construct. And so we wound up eliminating that option, the option of just using our existing facilities and adding on to them. And of course, there's all the other attendant downsides of building onto our additional schools with our core areas. The gyms, are only so large. There's only so much room for lunches and the library space and things like that. So by the time it's not just classrooms you're adding, it's small group space you're adding. Mm-hmm. You're adding physical classrooms, but then you're also, to do it right, really need to expand your core spaces as well. And by the time you do all that, you push that option off the table. So the recommended three different options we retained were essentially building a new K-5 on either a large parcel or at the Spalding location. Or the other option that we introduced, I don't think it was part of the MFP committee, was to purchase a large parcel of land that's large enough to build a new 6-8 Hadley, if you will, and then reconfigure Hadley into a K-5 center. So those are the three different options we landed on. Of course, the new K-5 buildings would also require additions at Hadley, and then we don't really know at this point that something that the board would have to consider is what else you need to do at some of the other elementary schools, at least in the first phase, just to get to the point of removing all portables. Whether you put a building at Spalding or, depending on wherever a large parcel might be, where you put a K-5, you can't necessarily send all the kids from all four schools to that one location. There's going to be boundary issues involved with that. So to address some of those, you know, the board may just have to decide, okay, we're going to build a new K-5, but then we're also going to add on, you know, a little bit here or there. And that here or there may be one or two elementary schools. But the point being, it wouldn't be a full renovation like some of other options would.
But more of an add-on than a tear-down and add.
Right, more of an add-on than a tear-down and reconstruct in that kind of scenario. Go ahead. So those are the three options kind of for the long-term vision. The long-term, the three different options for getting to where we want to get with a long-term vision. The other thing the Finance and Facility Committee was asked to do is, well, what do we need to do in the short term? And we're at a point now where you've got three options. We didn't narrow it down to one. The committee couldn't do that. We couldn't get to that. So obviously the next step for the board would be to make that decision. But in making that decision, obviously two of our options revolve around land acquisition. So we'd recommend that the district begin a search of some kind, a study to determine how many, you know, what are potential parcels for a large site for construction of a K-5 or a middle school. And then also maybe concurrently determine whether or not we should pursue property acquisition if we find such a parcel, and then how would we fund that? Should we use our reserves? That's a question not unrelated to our discussion at our last meeting that was just on reserves in general. Mm-hmm. We'd also suggest a new demographic study to either confirm what we've seen lately, and that's essentially been a flat enrollment for the last few years, and based on that demographic study, whether we need to alter the enrollment assumptions that our finance committee had, which was 3,700. Then, of course, the obvious choose between the options, and then importantly, determine what's the next steps for community engagement for this decision process. At what point do we want to bring the community back into the decision making process, and what form should that take? And then long term, of course, we're talking all of our options left are constructing the new building, and then also the next step. You could construct a new building, put on some additions that'll eliminate the portables, but to get to that long-term vision of how do we get that flexibility of space that we would clearly have in a new building, how do we push that out into all of our four elementary buildings? That's kind of a long-term plan that the board would need to decide upon. And that, of course, is going to be heavily dependent on what you build and what you decide to renovate at the time of that new construction.
Before we go any further, I just would like to thank Bob for that wonderful presentation, and Drew, who is his committee member. So when Bob says we couldn't come to reach a conclusion about which of the options, there were only two of them making that decision, and so there was a 50-50.
It was either rock, paper, scissors, or give you two.
But I also want to acknowledge Bob Cicerella and Phyllis Hanna, Bob, who leads the Finance Committee, and Phyllis, who participated in these discussions with the Board Committee throughout the whole process, and congratulate the two members of your committee who just kept this at the forefront of their conversations and did a great deal of research around that. And then before we get to questions or discussion about the board member, I would like to recognize that there are several people here in the audience this evening who served on the Master Facilities Committee, and thank you so much for responding to the invitation to come this evening. And if you could stand where we might recognize you one more time for the contribution you made to getting this started. We really appreciate that you have hung in there with your interest and that you came this evening to hear about the board's next steps recommendations. Bob, I'll turn it back to you.
Sure. Well, we discussed, we were kind of discussing before the meeting what should the next step of the board be. And our feeling was that this isn't something that's going to be well served by kind of our one-hour discussions that we've kind of got at the end of meetings now. So we'd be recommending that we get some workshop meetings with the board, maybe just to go over these recommendations if there's questions around that, and then kind of decide on next step and maybe start talking about some of the short-term recommendations or maybe any other ideas that the board would have. So we were envisioning a workshop meeting in March and maybe in April. And then after the new board gets around, I'm sure, you know, an up-to-speed meeting would be in order there. As far as now, though, I mean, if there's any questions from the board, we'd certainly entertain them.
Well, just so, you know, our guests and participants in the meeting know, this is a conversation that we've been having, obviously, for a long time. And often at the finance meetings, those of us who are around and can make it, we've been coming to finance so we could stay up to speed on kind of the direction of this. So a lot of this conversation has been taking place, even with the larger board, even though the finance committee had been charged with moving forward and really doing the pull apart and drill down on this. So, again, thanks to Bob and to Drew for sticking with us. And I agree. I mean, the note I made to myself coming in tonight was not to have another long conversation. I think that we all agree that these short-term, long-term are the direction we need to go in. And so a workshop where we roll up our sleeves and say, here's the next steps. And if we're going to do the demographic report, get that going, because all these things take time. And that's certainly precious in terms of wanting to start to move on this. So I agree. I think workshop meetings and get calendars together.
I have two dates to suggest.
There we go.
We have, I'm suggesting the second Monday in March and the second Monday in April. That would be March 14th and April 11th. Those are Mondays. Tried to stay with Mondays. Those could be workshop meetings. And assuming that the April 11th is following the board election, and so we'd still have Bob with us, but we could invite any new board members who are newly elected to come to that meeting and you know, have an opportunity to participate as well.
Okay.
No, April 5th is the election. April 11th.
You know what, I mean, after our last board meeting, you know, we had a chance to kind of go back and look through the site plan and you know, revisit, because for the past 6 years that I've been on the board, this has been a part of the discussion. So while I'm certainly not trying to, I don't mean to try to accelerate the discussion, but I mean, I really feel like we have to put the 14th and the 11th on our calendars and just keep moving, because we really can't wait till after the election, because we will definitely have two returning board members per se. We will have a minimum of one new board member and possibly two new board members. But we need to keep the conversation going, because frankly, while I feel that the process that you guys use to eliminate and the participation was there, it's been, you know, another year of this same discussion, and it's unfair to our community, it is to people who participated in this for all these years, and you know, and it's unfair to us. We have to make decisions and keep moving forward. I was at a basketball game a couple weeks ago, and I had somebody say, you know, wouldn't it be great to have all-day kindergarten at Main Street School? And I just kind of looked at the parent, and I'm like, yeah, that'd be really a great idea. We've had that discussion for the past 8 years. Where have you been? So, you know, but in terms of bringing this back to the table, we just have to keep moving. And the rest of us, the board, has to come to the table and actually have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be an easy conversation, but we have to keep talking about it.
Well, the good news is that the options have been narrowed to three, and you know, I would hope that in the interest of that definition, that there would be no interest on the part of other board members to go back to any of the other options and to accept the recommendation, since Finance Committee was charged by the full board to come back with that. So we've made progress, and I think we should note that and have every opportunity to arrive at a single recommendation, I believe, by the end of April.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a few comments on, you know, some of the things you talked about. One thing to add was, you know, one difference from what the Finance Committee did versus the Steering Committee was they did look at the financial options, where that Steering Committee really wasn't given that criteria. So that's probably something that, you know, was kind of a little different in the way we were able to eliminate some, or the Finance Committee was able to eliminate some things. And then when you also talked about enrollment at Flat, well, it's, you know, we've added portables over the last 8 years. I mean, it's been flat. Once we get to this point, you know, that we already have a number of classes in portable classrooms, so there's still a need there no matter what. And, you know, I think a demographic study, again, really getting at some criteria with our demographer would be good going forward, because we have been flat where most of the districts around us have been losing enrollment, you know, with Lombard, District 89 to the south, Wheaton. I mean, Marquardt hasn't, but Carroll Stream has significantly. Mm-hmm. You know, what is different about our enrollment area that we've tended to stay somewhat steady in the enrollment? And really, you know, we would like to come up with a solution that really is flexible going forward for decades. I mean, that's the way I'm looking at this, is a solution that will set us up for the next couple decades, you know, in terms of facilities and other things. And when I look at the cost, I really want to look at it over a couple decades and not just the upfront cost that it would be a one-time cost. So I'm looking forward to really digging into these. I think there's a lot of pros and cons on what we've got. And I really see it as, too, in terms of a land acquisition, whether it's a K-5 or a junior high, I mean, I think that's really something that the community gets involved in and goes through all the pros and cons of that. But it's really, you know, build on Spalding or long-term, you know, a land acquisition. Mm-hmm. And for there, I'd really put some criteria on that, too, in terms of a land acquisition that we already know we're not looking to take any homeowners, we're not looking to eminent domain homes at all. You know, is there a piece of land out there that is owned by a private party that possibly can be, you know, negotiated for, doesn't affect any homeowners, doesn't affect the tax base much in terms of taking something off the tax base, pushing, you know, costs onto the homeowners even more when you remove something. So, you know, even then I'd like to, you know, I think that's what the board's looking to do, is find something that meets some of those criteria and going forward.
Yeah, we didn't set any criteria for land acquisition, but I will say that the Spalding test fits that we looked at didn't involve any acquisition. In fact, they didn't even involve the Park District property to the north, you know, that's adjacent to it to the north necessarily, except as green space or maybe playground space. So, yeah, we weren't looking at any of the properties
right
around there as something to be acquired.
Right, and I think our architects did what we did. If we gave them a 2-acre parcel, they'd come up with a school for 600 students and say, here's what my best guess on doing this. What we really didn't do is ask the administration from that recommendation, would you actually go ahead and do this? And I don't think it's the best option going forward if we've got other things we can do. So, but, you know, it may be the only option that's left at a certain point, you know, that we really have to start building somewhere. But, you know, I think we've come with two good options to look at going forward. And hopefully, yes, a new board uses all the information we have. All the matrices are public, out in the, you know, public record in terms of our meeting notes and other things and the audio from our meetings. So, you know, hopefully everyone's able to look at that and see how we came to the conclusions that we did.
And, you know, and I forgot to mention, one of the things that you did talk about was 21st century learning. So this isn't just about building a building and chopping up some spaces for kids to be literally housed. It's about an educational plan that best meets the needs of our students.
Right. I mean, one of the options that was eliminated in the initial pass was the option of, okay, you've got six portables at Lincoln, we need to figure out how to get six classrooms onto this. You know, that's a different idea than what the recommendation gets at, because that would be would not include sort of the flexible space in 21st century learning environment issues that we want to get to.
I mean, one thing, I mean, even Tara brought up, I guess, something that maybe wasn't there that comes up every once in a while about, you said, well, you know, something at Main Street School. I mean, did we even look at options where we can go reacquire buildings that we don't own that are owned by other, like the Park District or other things? Some people have mentioned, why don't you just go and get the buildings back that you owned 20 years ago and
yeah,
are no longer yours?
We didn't look at those. Are the issues. Those buildings are not four section K5 buildings.
Okay.
So you'd essentially be acquiring a large parcel and building, you know, and have to add on to or, you know, tear down, and there's issues associated with that with some of those locations.
Okay.
You know, Spring Avenue or Main Street.
And you can't eminent domain another public entity's land anyway. You can't just go take it. Okay.
I think the last thing that's interesting is, and there was just another article in the Daily Herald today, but over the last couple, 3 months, while we've been having this conversation, the information about the demographic changes within the western suburbs moving out to Kane and Will counties and some of the shift in demographics in our student population really supports some of the learning we've been doing as a board, but certainly our teachers have been doing for the last many years on the changing demographic and how to adapt and adopt space that can teach in that with that environment in terms of that student population. So to Steve's point and to Bob's point, this is really a far-reaching look, and I think I'm energized because we're bringing together all those subsets and that criteria, which have been disparate conversations up until our Master Facility Planning Committee kind of pulled that together and then handed the ball to us and then to Finance and now back. So it's, I think it's a really well-researched set of options, and so those decisions really need to be then communicated and discussed with the community so that there's an understanding of the amount of work that's been done. I need to say that twice. So I'm, again, excited about moving to the next step and doing it effectively and efficiently and really moving this conversation forward to keep this momentum going. So, thank you, Bob. Thank you.
What next?
Sure. I just had one other comment before we get comments from many of our members who are part of the steering committee, is to say, you know, no matter what, we need to present a plan as a board. Mm-hmm. You know, whether, you know, but ultimately the community is going to have to decide on the plans that we put forth. As a board, we can't just go and build a new school. So, but as a board, it is our responsibility to put forth some plan and not just have a plan saying we'll put up portable classrooms and have them here for 20 or 30 years, because that's not a plan. Mm-hmm. So we feel we do need to put this forth as to, you know, when we actually, there is a referendum and other things, that's still to be determined, and it's ultimately up to the community to approve of that. But so
I mean, I just want to say it's important to recognize what this is, but also what it isn't. And the master facility process that happened a couple of years ago, and this process that the Finance Committee involved, this isn't what's the absolute cheapest way we can get rid of portables. It's a totally different mm-hmm. objective, mm-hmm. and that's not what this process produced, mm-hmm. and it's not what our guiding principle was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would think that would be clear, but that's not what this was about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yes.
I think sometimes people assume that that's what we're going to do, and that's not.
It's bigger than
that. Yeah. We're looking at a plan that's going to hopefully, you know, be useful for decades. That's, you know, that a short term, how do we just get rid of portables the cheapest way possible? And then in 10 years, we may not have the right solution again. So. But at this time, I don't know if there are any members of the steering committee that have any comments on the follow-up work that's been done by the board that are out that we invited today. Rob?
I just had one question. Knowing the parameters that the committee and yourselves were under,
in terms of this, are there still other options being looked at? For instance, District 89 and District 41 merging, with Governor Quinn talking today about we're getting rid of and merging a number of school districts across the state. Is that still a viable option? Getting contact with District 87 and talking about, if we're talking about a long-term solution, I realize this is not a, you know, put it to a vote tomorrow and you know, merge the two, change the boundaries, but is it still an option? Before we go ahead and put together, you know, the referendum or the possibility of going to referendum for a building plan, can we exhaust it? That supply, have we gone out to the community and found out whether that's a direction that people would like to see? So I guess my question really boils down to, is it still something that's on the board, on the table to be discussed? I know, again, knowing the parameters as to what we were under and to what you're under, I can understand where you're coming up with these options to present mm-hmm. and to go forward with. But I guess my question is, Is this all you're going to discuss? Or are there still options out there, knowing also that you added on purchasing a large parcel of land? That's an add-on, it's a good add-on. Also merging school districts might be another thing to consider.
I can tell you that a consolidation wasn't part of the options that we included in ours. We've had a consolidation discussion, I don't know when that was, a year ago. And that wasn't even a discussion about whether we thought it was a good idea. It was a discussion more along the lines of, is 89 interested in pursuing that? And they weren't at that time. So, we didn't have a collective opinion on whether we should consolidate or not. We were just more asking the question of, is this something we should investigate? But without 89 having that interest to start that first step, that kind of feasibility study kind of step, look at it, and what does it mean to the both districts, all that work that goes at the forefront of a consolidation decision, without having that other partner, we wouldn't want to, our board wasn't going to go on our own.
Rob, I would almost suggest there are two different conversations. That the consolidation conversation, particularly given Governor Quinn's recent announcement, is not something we can say, not considering, off the table. That obviously is something that all school districts are going to be looking at with a different lens, given that direction. But there will have to be parallel conversations, because regardless, we still need a master facilities plan in the district to take us forward. Obviously, if a consolidation occurred, the conversation would shift if that became the predominant conversation. So I appreciate that comment, but I think probably we'll have to pursue them as parallel paths to some extent over the next couple of years.
And, personal opinion. It's my understanding that the extra space that 89 has is way on the south end of their district. So it's not like Parkview has 10 empty classrooms waiting for students from 41. So you'd be talking about consolidation and then, a big change in boundaries. And what do you do with... we've got portables up at Churchill. It's not like, it's not that easy to just shift all boundaries south and to take advantage of that extra space. So I'm my opinion, if the district's consolidated tomorrow, I think the space issues that we're having, they might be lessened somewhat, but I don't think they're going to be solved by the space that exists in 89 that's not being utilized right now.
And the short-term costs may actually go up. Yeah, and that's what I would say. The last study we were shown, even Winfield District 34 and Benjamin District 25 and West Chicago District 33 had a consulting firm actually look at them, and the consulting firm concluded it really wasn't in the best interest financially or educationally for their students. Even that district, very close to us. So it's hard to say. Yeah. When Governor Quinn talks about districts, he wants them to get to at least 1,500. You have to understand, most of those districts are south of I-80. They're farm towns and other things.
A 3,700 district student elementary district is not a small district. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, 5,000 would get bigger.
Are there other comments from the other master facilities participants?
I just have one comment I was going to make. I'm glad to see, as you know, I came before the board in November. I'm just glad to see that you're moving forward toward planning, because I think by doing a plan is really good for the district. Whether or not we find it right away or whether or not we implement it right away, I think it's really important that we look at it and look at the things. I think what the points you made are very important. One is improving the educational quality of our classrooms from a physical standpoint, and two, trying to be somewhat democratic and trying to get the most impact for the whole district. Because one thing that I think our committee looked at is you build one new school, and then you have this new school and you've got the whole district, which is difficult to come up how you get across it. And that could happen, but I think if you take a look at all the different schools and all the different students that are going to attend them, if you can make improvements to our classrooms to achieve the educational goals physically, as many as we can would be the goal, I think, of the district and the board.
Thank you. Any other members of the Master Facilities Committee?
Did you have a comment, Jim? Okay. I guess that's all for the presentation. Again, thanks for the Finance Committee for all the hard work and the staff for helping out. And next up, we have our consent agenda. So are there any items board members would like to remove from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Okay, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes the following. The Human Resources Personnel Report with employment recommendations, resignations, leave requests, and internal transfers. Also, the Finance, Facilities, and Operations Treasurer's Report, Investment Schedule, Monthly Revenue Expenditure Summary Report, Summary of Bills and Payroll, School District Payment Order, Vandalism Damage Report, Disposal of Surplus Property, and the 2010-11 FOIA Report. Also, we have the board regular meeting minutes from the February 7, 2011 meeting.
So moved.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Solak?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Baumier?
Yes. Okay, next up we have our superintendent's recommendations. First, we have the 2011-12 student fees. At the February 7, 2011 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to keep District 41 student fees for the 2011-12 school year the same as the current year's fees. They have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Roll call, please.
Mr. Solak?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Vandrick?
Yes. Second, we have the 2011 request for proposal results for electric services. So, again, at the February 7, 2011 meeting, the board discussed the administration's recommendation to award a contract for District 41 electric services for the period of March 21, 2011 through December 31st, 2013, to the low bidder, Integris Energy Services / Nania Energy. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion?
No.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Solak?
Yes.
Mr.
Bondrack? Yes. Okay, third, we have the approval of proposed change in the use of legal school holidays, which we had our public hearing on earlier today. And this is Illinois School Code 105 ILCS 5/24-2. So earlier this evening, a public hearing was held to hear testimony on the district's proposal to change the designation for the use of the school holidays, Veterans Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Abraham Lincoln's birthday, Casimir Pulaski Day, and Columbus Day, allowing the district to choose whether or not to observe certain holidays. The administration is recommending board approval of its proposal to change the use designation of these holidays. Once approved by the board, the provision is valid forever and until the school code is changed and the district is no longer required to submit a new request every 5 years. Board approval of this proposal will allow the district to designate or use select holidays for student attendance, teacher institute, parent-teacher conference, or staff development activities, such as school improvement and in-service training. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded. Any discussion?
When does this goes into effect next school year?
Well, we currently have a waiver that expires next school year, so it will just be a continuation.
After 2012.
After 2012.
2012.
Yes.
Okay. I can't remember. Do we use any of these? I mean, how do we use any of these particular days?
We waive Casimir Pulaski Day currently. We waive Veterans Day currently. Mm-hmm. Veterans Day currently.
Okay. We have like in school Veterans Day presentations.
That's a federal holiday. We don't need a waiver to not observe it. The holiday celebrated in Illinois is Lincoln's birthday.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And we waive that as well.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes. Okay, last we have board policy number 2210, organizational school board meeting. At its February 7, 2011 meeting, the board conducted a second reading and considered approval of recommended revisions to the Section 2 board policy and procedures. At that time, board discussion focused on the proposed language to policy number 2210 and determined that the language would require further review for board approval. In response to that discussion, Erica Nelson has edited this policy and the administration is recommending board approval. May I have a motion to approve policy 2210 as presented?
So motion. Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Nice change.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Good
job. Yes, and thank you to Anna for editing as well.
Appreciate All right.
It. Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, now we have the superintendent's report.
I would just like to mention that the continuous improvement team, I'm doing this somewhat on behalf of Steve because he was unable to make our CIT meeting last week. We presented the draft of the long-range plan to CIT and asked them to break up into table groups to look at the plan, since they have really been the partners in developing that plan up to this point. And they have made some good comments about it and have looked forward to seeing the unfolding of action plans surrounding that and certainly looking forward to having the board view the plan, which we plan to bring to you in March. So the renewal of the long-range plan, which is focused really both symbolically and literally on 21st century learning, is right in line with certainly the master facilities conversation that we've just had. So we're very excited to get the fine-tuning of that and bring it to you. There was some good discussion about how to roll this new plan out to the community because it is more complex and yet very specific. One community member who serves on CIT suggested that it could be overwhelming. And so finding ways in which we can summarize the plan and yet give opportunity for people to go deeper into the plan to see the specificity around it. So we'll be looking forward to getting the board's reaction to that and your own thoughts about whether or not we're headed down the right path. Mm-hmm.
Okay, any questions for Ann? Okay, next up we have board member reports. Anyone wish to give a report at this time?
Yes, I attended the leadership team last week. Our meeting canceled because of the blizzard. So we met last week and we reviewed two PDF days for curriculum for bilingual ESL and the special education curriculum, and the work scheduled to begin in the spring and then they'll work through the summer and into next year. But a call out to the membership was sent out to have people volunteer to serve on those committees. It's sort of hard for them because they're, you know, very specialized bilingual ESL and special education. So, you know, reaching out to their memberships is a little bit more difficult, but I'm sure that they will have success. We also went through ISAD data for both reading and math, and we broke out into to table groups and kind of pulled apart some of that ISTAT data and you know, looked at the trends and different, you know, observations. But we meet in March. And this morning I attended the PTA Council meeting. The highlights from that meeting were District 37 PTA Council held their district-wide PTA meeting at the Gwinnett Allen Public Library last week. And that the state PTA conference is March 11th, begins March 11th, and that's in Schaumburg. The PTA Council nominated committee has been set. Erica, you are so kindly serving on that committee as a member of PTA Council as well. But if there's anyone willing to serve and is interested in serving on the PTA Executive Board, to contact the PTA Council President. She's on the committee, right?
Yeah, Jolie Murphy, myself, and
Linda Ranchero.
Linda Ranchero, yeah.
So Jolie Murphy. The Parent Involvement Committee has been very successful this year. They've done some really interesting programming, and tomorrow night is a math night at Churchill School. But they're hoping to get at least one person from each school to serve on that parent involvement committee. It would help with communication and outreach to each of the buildings. But like I said, tomorrow, Churchill School for math night. Also at Churchill, being hosted at Churchill School on Monday, March 7th from 7 to 8, is a speaker to discuss food allergy or allergies with children in our schools. So that's being hosted at Churchill as well. And two other things. One, Ben Franklin School is tentatively, they're going to be confirming tonight, but they tentatively are going to be hosting a candidate forum. It'll be hosted by Ben Franklin, but it's encouraged by all the PTAs, the five schools, the four elementaries, and Hadley. And that will be on March 10th from 7 to 8, and the candidates will get information about that. And then finally, there was a discussion about all of our PTAs, I think it is now, have websites, right? Look at this website, right? Okay. I'm looking at you going, I know you're president. Okay. So, but there was a discussion around the use of student photos and can they use student photos versus the district policy. So that is something that they are themselves going to take a look at in terms of their desires and what they would like the PTA websites with the pictures, and then we'll talk about it at the next PTA council, and then we, the board, could take a look at our policy if needed to see if we're all reflecting the same thing. But I sent Maureen my written report.
Thank you.
The four candidate forms.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's the League of Women Voters one over Glencrest, I think.
Right.
So all the PTAs aren't having their own this time?
So what they decided to do, so it came up last month, and I think my impression was that it sort of, I don't want to say it snuck up on everybody, but I think there's no referendum. That doesn't seem to be somewhat of a hotly contested race this year. And it's, you know, it's sort of a midterm election. And there was a lot of discussion in the last 2 months about whether they should have each school have their own or have one or two that kind of so that all the schools participate. I think candidate forums at some buildings are really well attended, and then at other buildings, nobody's, you know, there's not a lot of attendance. And so they thought that given the short period of time, they would host one. I mean, if one of the schools changes their mind, I'm sure they could do it. They've usually been gone in conjunction with their board, meaning there was nobody there from Lincoln today. So I think, you know, if you guys were missed out on that conversation, but we talked about it at the last meeting, and that they had really talked about just doing one. And so they did a little bit of the pros and cons of that. But I don't think, 2 years ago, I don't think Lincoln hosted a, I'm trying to remember if you hosted a committee.
Yeah, you did.
Before.
They did.
Okay. They all blur together after a while, but I think they just the assumption was that maybe it would be good quality to have one to have the school there. I know it's easier for the candidates, so
yeah. Okay.
I have a board report. I was at the Lincoln PTA meeting with Lee Fruit, who's the Lincoln president here, and her team at the Civic Center last Thursday. And Shannon Cross, our principal, discussed the presentation tonight and then also talked about ISATs coming up and kind of the philosophy around that, and then gave some information around a different methods for additional measure of academic progress, which was a good reminder to parents about how we use certainly ISATs, but also these other pieces, so that was quite good. The other highlight I wanted to make was something that I think gets short shrift among those who don't attend PTA regularly, and that's the whole idea of having bylaws. And I just want to commend, and I did at the PTA meeting as well, the work that the Vice President does under the President's leadership to make sure that those are up to date. And, you know, you don't really pay attention to those until you realize you're not following a bylaw, and that each of the PTAs certainly have their own standing rules, et cetera, which they do a good job of kind of fine-tuning around their needs. So nice job on that. And then there was a good discussion around the PTA budget and a discussion around a kind of reserve that they have that has accrued over the years, and discussion around what to do with that. And Lee does a really nice job of working with Jean Donovan, who is the district rep for Illinois PTA in our area. And Jean's terrific. She gives a lot of good advice and just has a lot of experience. So she was going to be working with Jean to talk about what some other districts are doing, other PTAs or PTOs, regarding treasury balances. So that will come up again. But just a real good focus on not letting issues get away from them, and just a nice turnout for the meeting as well. It was a good meeting. And I gave Maureen a written report on that. And then this is not a report, but I just want to send up a kind of a kudo. Today at Hadley, the seventh grade had a in-service on diversity. And my son's in seventh grade, and Maddie as well. And he came home just really jazzed up about the conversation and the learning that went on, and he actually used that term. And just the importance of that aligning with another program that Dr. Dranzak just started, which we know about, the Best Buddies Club, and that matching of students within Hadley to you know, be working across boundaries on some level and really trying to integrate kids at all levels. So he was just taken with the presenters, the different types of presentations, the energy, and when his older sister, who's a senior, said to him, well, did any kids, you know, not do well with the presentation? And he turned, he said, well, the ones who are not mature. So, coming from a seventh grader. But just kudos to the planning that goes into that, because that's part of our social-emotional learning standards. And, again, just an important piece of it. So I just wanted to get that on the table.
Thanks for coming.
You're welcome. They missed you, Dan. Where's Dan?
I'm going to get missed, but I'm not
happy to do it.
Okay, any other reports? Okay, hearing none. We have three discussion items. First is the proposed school calendar for 2011-12.
As you know, we have a calendar committee that meets annually to look at the calendar, and that calendar committee is comprised of a representative, Brian Booth, from our GIA association, Kathy... Oh, I'm so sorry, Brian. My gosh. I look right at him. Brian, I am so sorry. Brian Bunkowski. I know that name well. Brian Bunkowski from our GIA Association, Kathy Maxson from AFSCME, Mary Hornacek represents administration, Maureen Stecker serves on the committee along with me and Tara Howard as our board member representative. And each year we look at the previous year's calendar, look at things that we think went well, things that we thought perhaps didn't allow us to align with our guiding principles, or created some issues with flow. And there are a couple guiding principles that we have. One is to try and create as many five-day weeks as possible in the school year, and where we can't, to kind of package SIP days against our vacations, institutes against long weekends, so that it creates at least a little bit less of a break throughout the calendar. Next year's calendar, and I'll let Tara speak to this, it looks relatively similar to our current year calendar. with the exception of winter break. Do you want to talk a little bit about winter break, Tara?
Sure. You know what? The winter break, let me go back to 87. We usually wait for 87 to release their calendar, and we do our bus from here at least on major holidays, major breaks, spring break, winter break. And because of where Christmas falls next year, or 2011, excuse me, we're going midweek to midweek. So, in following with them, that's what we decided to do. However, we also included a sit day on that Wednesday. So the kids will go to school Monday, Tuesday, and a half a day Wednesday. Staff will work through Wednesday, and then technically, you know, starting Thursday the winter break. It's only one less full 5-day week than this year's calendar, but again, that's because of the winter break. A couple things that I wanted to note, that first of all, I think this calendar was probably the fastest that we've actually done it in 2 weeks. And I say that sort of in jest, but the reality of it is, we feel that this calendar from this year was very successful. Until probably Friday or today, we really did not receive complaints about the calendar or concerns. Issues of in-student sit, those are not things that we discuss at calendar committee because they're not issues to the calendar. Those are interests that we have as staff, board, administration that we will handle in the future. It's not a question of the calendar. And this past year, the reason, you know, President's Day being today, I mean, literally, you did not hear anything about issues of not being off, you know. I don't think people realized that we were not, that we had school today. Yet, today, miraculously, people, you know, didn't show up to school or work or so on and so forth. And so it was like the light bulb went on. So until today, or maybe even on Friday, there were some questions. The reason that we chose to not observe President's Day this year was because of the countywide institute day that is on Friday. So we chose to have our students in school starting Monday through Thursday of a half a day, and staff will be here the rest of the day on Thursday working. And then the countywide institute on Friday to preserve so that the kids don't come to school for 2 days in the middle of a week. I mean, it would be interesting to see what the full attendance would be for the week if we chose to do it that way. The calendar is set up for next year to, again, not observe President's Day. I think initially it was in anticipation of another countywide institute day, but that's just not the way it is next year. Countywide institute day is March 1st. And we, again, chosen to hold our March SIP days on that Friday.
No, the SIP day is
No, I'm sorry. The institute day is March 2nd. I apologize. That Friday.
And the SIP day is the Friday preceding what would be President's Day.
Right. No, well, right. But, I mean, and the March SIP day, I mean, is
preceding
spring break.
Yeah.
Okay. I just like to emphasize, as I did this morning at PTA Council, when we do a calendar, our calendar is to provide our students the best possible learning environment, for our staff the best possible learning environment for them too, for their professional development. It is not about setting up vacations for families to leave town. And that is a really frustrating and disappointing thing as a board member and as a parent, that those are choices that individual families make, but our job as when we develop a calendar is the best possible learning for students and for our staff.
The other thing that we want to note about this calendar is that next year is, in addition to the winter break being an exceptional break, having a midweek break being recommended, it's also a leap year. And because the recommendation at this point is not to observe President's Day, the school year will end May 30th. So 2 days earlier than what would have been our current year. If we did not observe and did not have any snow days. I do want to mention, because I did have some calls relative to not observing President's Day, and for some of those calls they asked if I would make sure I delivered the message to the board. So I do want to say that I received some calls, and not a flood of calls, but some calls where people were concerned that we weren't observing President's Day, since the presidents are important people to honor and in our country, and that should be a day of observance. And some others who just expressed
dismay
or like, oh my gosh. And within that context, the fact that 87 was off. And so families were in a quandary about the observance. We did see attendance rates today that were about triple more absences than we had 2 weeks ago on a Monday, February 7th. We just randomly chose February 7th. So attendance absences as high as 18% and as low as 11% compared to 6% and 3% on February 7th. We also had some difficulty getting subs, particularly in our aid group, not in our certified staff, but in our aid group. We had a multitude of aides unable to make it to work today, and the problem was perhaps not that they were, I mean, I'm sure they were sick, not taking the observance themselves, but we were unable to get subs because they were choosing to observe that day. So if we continue down the President's Day path, hopefully improved communication, or at least I think we communicated very well that this was going to be a not observed day, but kind of absorbing that mm-hmm. and recognize that we'll make some changes, though the sub situation relative to people not wanting to come in during that time, since they may have family members who are observing that, could present a challenge for us.
The absence rate, that was the student absence?
Student absence rate. Mm-hmm. Faculty absence rate was relatively low. I mean, what we would expect with a normal day.
And I just want to point out that the misconception about institute dates, because I think people assume that we have all these institute days through the year, and we don't. They are at the beginning of the school year, before students arrive, and at the end of the school year when the students are no longer with us. There are three institute days throughout the school year. One of them is the countywide. There's one in October that hopefully will be used this year. We have an opportunity to work with our Lombard Consortium District, and then another institute day for professional development for our staff. So I want to clarify that, because I think people often confuse the SIP days, school improvement days, with institute days, when they're really very different things. You guys want to be off on President's Day? I mean, that's a discussion. I mean, that's just a discussion item. I remember last year when we went through this, I felt very strongly about it as a lot of board members, because of this countywide institute on Friday. I mean, it's goofy to go to school, then you're off and you're here, then you're off again, and for continuity's sake. Next year, that's not the case. I have to sort of laugh, though, that a parent, you know, that to observe the presidents, and I guess in my mind, I think as a parent, what better way to observe their what they contributed than to be in school and learning about what it is that they did. So, I mean, I know my daughter's third grade classroom, that's what they did today, which is the point of learning. So, and I'm looking at a social studies teacher, and I'm sure he highlighted those things as well. So,
I mean, everyone loves a day off, right? But, I mean, just growing up, we used to do Pulaski Day, and I'm Polish, and we didn't observe it when we had the day off. It was a day off. We were watching cartoons or something. So I think it's much more, as you said, useful if you really want to observe a holiday like President's Day, to be learning as part of one of your units or whatever, and social studies, something about the president. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Well, in terms of communication, Julie, in the e-news, you popped that out a whole week beforehand to remind people. In fact, I think it came out twice, or it just showed up twice in my email account. But, I just think it's encouraging parents to, get when they get the calendar, put it on their calendar and just be good stewards of this information. I mean, there's only so much informing we can do, and then it's up to us as parents to, assimilate that into our yearly schedule. So...
And I know our principals communicated it in their newsletters as well to parents.
Yeah. No, I think last year you did yeoman work on this. It was a very long process. I know we were concerned about it taking so long to get out publicly. That was my concern. So I think the hard work was last year in trying to negotiate some of this to make it all come together. But I did a count on 5-day weeks, 4.5-day weeks, 4 weeks, and I think that you really were good stewards of wanting to maintain that criteria. I think that's really, really important. And, we have these other holidays, spring break, all those things. You lay those in, and then you layer those other pieces on top, and it does become pretty complex, which was my response to a couple emails that I received and offered to have conversation with parents who wrote with concerns. I've not been taken up on that, but I did a couple follow-up emails and left my phone number. So, hopefully they'll call and I can give a little bit more feedback on it since we have the calendar in front of us. So it is what it is.
I hear what everyone is saying. I just, at least for this President's Day thing, I don't see why we couldn't at least put it on the same day. Just from, my experience. I didn't have to work today, but I have to work on Friday. So that means we got to figure out what to do with the kid. And there's a lot of, obviously, right. The absence. Maybe it's child care issues or whatnot. So, yes, you can go through communication, but you can also avoid the issue, too, by scheduling that institute day or sip day on the President's Day.
We didn't have control of that.
Yeah, Fridays is a countywide institute day. We did not come up with this day. It is dictated by the county, and next year, like you said, it's on March 2nd. And
I'm talking about next year, but what is the countywide day? Is that just the day? Is there countywide conferences?
It's all learning.
All the math teachers will go to some high school for an auditorium for a speaker.
Every school in right. DuPage County is off on Friday for an institute day, and it's the same concept, Dan, because I know just anecdotally we've had that discussion about what if the kids are off on President's Day, but the teachers have to come to work and do an institute day. And I'm just using President's Day, could be Columbus, whatever it is. And it's the same thing. So is it about students being off? Is it about, because your staff are in the same, that you could still have the same argument that, you have staff who have child care issues. You have parents with child care issues on the 8 half SIP days that we have throughout the year. So, I don't know. If the board feels that they would like to observe President's Day by having the day off, then
I think I'm talking about in terms of combining that SIP day, or if it's an institute day, shuffling it around with the federal holiday. My other son's preschool says they follow D-41, but they must have got faked out because they were off today. Just my other question is on the Columbus Day and the Institute Day and the Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. Why, again, can we not combine those on the same day?
So you're saying have the kids put off, but staff have an Institute Day on those days?
Well, we didn't discuss Martin Luther King Day. We can discuss the October in the future, but I will take responsibility for bearing down with the Glenbard Associate Districts in since that was a day we used for an Institute Day, and we wanted to find a day where we would all observe the same time. Rather than they wanted to observe it later in September, and I indicated that that would mean one more 4-day week for us, so I asked if they would consider moving to the 11th. Mm-hmm. So at least for another calendar year, we need that day because the other Glenbards have all agreed to that day in their calendar process. So that one you can blame on.
You're saying that used to be in September?
No, we've always observed it, or at least, in recent years, and we've observed it following Columbus Day by still observing Columbus Day. I think what Dan is saying, can you not observe Columbus Day for staff and move your Institute Day there? And I said, we can enter that conversation in future years, but because we've all committed in the Glenbard to have this particular date,
it's on their calendar.
It's on their calendars as well. So for at least next year, we need to observe that.
And what about the January date?
We didn't have a discussion at calendar committee about not observing Martin Luther King Day for faculty.
What if we do this year?
we observed Martin Luther King Day and had an institute day on the other side of them. So mm-hmm. it's identical.
Mm-hmm. Just been, you know, always looking for the longer school weeks. Did you say we have one less?
Well, because of the winter break. Yeah. That's why.
And remember that you can have longer school weeks, but your school year will end earlier. Right. So there's just so we're clear that's the trade-off for...
And that was, it's interesting because, you know, as we sit there and we go through and we count and we look at and move stuff around, all of a sudden, as a parent, you're like, holy cow, May 30th, oh, wait a minute. And for a working parent, day camp hasn't started. Like, all of a sudden, you start thinking, oh my gosh, I have other child care issues. And while I think we want to... you know, we have a large number of working parents in our community. So, you know, it's that odd day here and there, but it's also, when is the school year going to end? If it ends so early and none of these camps have started, there's, you know, there's summertime plans, things like that. Summer school, you know, we start planning for that. You have these days.
Well, I guess I would argue with that. You know, that's a long stretch of period, so you're going to have it no matter what, versus it's much easier to find someone for the onesie day versus the twosie day. Now you got it's so okay to ask grandma for one day, but when you get the two, then she, you know, needs a drink at the end of the Sunday.
Dan, we also have commitments on some of these holidays to other labor groups with whom we work, so that we would have to adjust their calendars as well. Because those are holidays that they observe in the contracts that they have with us. So there is an impact to that sort of thing that we probably have to have a much larger conversation around. Impact other labor groups, length of the school year. So it's certainly not a taboo subject, but...
What are the numbers below each month here? 10/16, 10/16, 19/18...
Warren, do you want to explain those numbers?
I'm sorry. I would type the numbers.
The teacher days and student attendance days. I don't know that they're that 10 and 16. Remember, we looked at that at one point and said these weren't accurate, but
they're only there for 5 days.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that either we didn't make those changes or and this. This is our draft. This is kind of a working draft we put in there, as opposed to the narrative, which is
that's
the one
that's probably
should
post. Be 10 and 6. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so we count a SIF as a full student day, and then that all rolls up to the numbers at the bottom there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because remember, we're making up those minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a couple of questions. Does winter break align with Lombard?
Yes.
Exactly.
Not exactly.
Because we have a SIF. We decided to. We have a SIF day that we have to get in there, and so we decided to do a SIF. So West will be out on. Like they won't go to school on the 21st, but we have a half day.
We'll have a half day in the morning.
So mm-hmm. we have. So that's again part of the 30th, the May 30th day. We have one less day in our winter break.
But they're back on Wednesday.
Correct.
Okay. The other thing just is. You know, not to belabor this stuff with Presidents' Day. If we have lower attendance, does that affect any state funding in terms of average daily attendance? That you get a day that kids don't show up, that it's, you know, it's just not worth it because it's costing us money anyway.
Well, I can't tell you right now. I mean, our general update aid is based on our three-month best attendance. I don't know, February is one of our months or not. I don't know that. But if it is, then yeah, the hit to that. Removes it from one of our best funds. So I mean, it's all done on a proration basis. So it could have an impact. Anytime that students aren't in the chairs, those are less numbers that we get to claim as mm-hmm. days attended, and then it factors into the formula.
The other thing is with the busing, the fact that her student isn't running Glenbard routes. Is there a premium that they just run 41 routes today and those bus drivers are there?
No.
Okay.
Our route, our per day route is the same every day of our contract, regardless of whether we were getting, they're running the Glenbard.
There were no issues that they had drivers who didn't show up, didn't know they had worked today.
We didn't hear anything.
Okay. I mean, I personally, whether we observe it or not, I don't have an issue.
next year. I think that's 1 week we can say it wasn't a full week. But for now, I'll prove this. This is fine. But.
Well, again, if the board, I mean, you know, if the board feels...
I think it's valid to have on for discussion for next year, you know, to note it. But I think the other thing might have been, again, this is the first year that, and it may not have been the child care issue as much as parents had already made plans, and they followed through with them. Mm-hmm. You know, so if that's what it was, that's what it was. You know, so having the conversation, getting the communication out there, putting arrows on it, saying, please put this on your calendar, you know, I don't know, just asking people to pay
attention. See what happens next year.
Right, right. It could be an anomaly, so.
What do we know from the attendance if...
We have the individual schools have the breakdown. I don't have that breakdown with me. There was about 30-40% sick, and the remainder, I didn't know it was a, I didn't know we weren't observing it or we planned, you know, we had something planned.
Just no parent called. That student just wasn't in school.
Right. We call them.
Oh, then you called to find out? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, any other discussion? Well, this is all discussion. So. We will bring this for a vote next meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a vote. So those two reflection and
okay, so any other questions for the administration or the calendar committee? I guess we've got till the next meeting, but we will be voting then. And then next up we have the 2011 summer capital projects.
This is the annual update, and I'll defer to Bob if there are any specific questions, but Bob has laid out the plans that he has for the summer work, beginning at Churchill and Franklin and Lincoln, and making some replacements of flooring and paving outside the buildings. You can see on page 2 of the recommendation what the bids came in at, and... And so we are recommending the low bid of $994,182. If you have specific questions about this, it was presented at Finance Committee last week, or last board meeting, excuse me, and good discussion. I'm sorry.
We're not recommending the low bid of R&L Soho. That was, they would
do that. Oh, that's right. Thank you. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bob, for that correction.
Mm-hmm.
We're familiar with that.
Yeah.
Why was this one not included?
They called us the morning after the bids were open.
I'm sorry, the ultimate bid, S1.
We decided it was just too costly of a project to be included. We were doing it more for convenience at the back end of this building, as you can see, a large gym of the back area here. We were considering putting a ramp in just to help with transition for custodial staff and be honest with you. I think it came in at around $50,000, and we thought that was just too much money to commit to that type of project at this time.
Mm-hmm. One other question. I was just looking at the professional fees here with the project, and usually it's in the 10% range, but I'm figuring it's like 15%. Is that just extra budgeting, or are we seeing higher rates?
No, our fees are typically between 8.5% to 9%, but that's for the architectural section. You also have engineering fees involved with this because of the parking lot sidewalk project. Of course, anytime you do any type of work here in Glen Ellyn, you have stormwater implications. So this is a combination of professional fees would be both for architectural services as well as engineering services.
I guess that's what I'm still confused. From the presentation that we saw back in November, there was a subtotal of $700,000, and it says professional fees, including architectural and engineering, 10%, contingency, of 10%. And so when I look at these professional fees, I see $100,000, it's running about 15% of the $674,000 subtotal that I see. That's what I'm kind of confused about.
Again, these are just estimates. I'm just trying to come up with an estimated cost, an all-inclusive cost for all type of professional fees that may be involved in this type of project.
Okay.
again, they could be architectural, they could be engineering, they could be legal fees. I mean, there's a lot of different possibilities for the types of fees that are involved here. Trying to give you sort of the worst case scenario, this is what I think we would spend under the worst of conditions, maybe not the most ideal.
Is it, the way I read this at the bottom of our page 48 to 61, is that there's a total for pricing at $994,000, and I read this that those professional fees were that 8 to 10 or whatever percent on that number, not on the bid for summer capital projects, which is the 63.
Also,
so that's how I read it.
And I've also included fees in here for the potential for the Handley project.
The courtyard.
The courtyard project. There are architectural as well as engineering fees involved in that.
That are included in this cost?
No, later. But I tried to be all inclusive. I have a recommendation that's next for the Hadley Courtyard. Within that $190,000 in the Hadley Courtyard, there are additional fees built into that approximation.
But I think in response to your question, Dan, the estimate that was given back in November, this estimate is larger and represents a more conservative approach. Obviously, when we finish a project, we give you what the actual costs were and try to stay below that.
And I don't know what fees typically are based on a sliding scale depending upon the amount of work that's completed and the type of work that's
Maybe I'm just misremembering, because I remember in the past usually it was 10% and it usually fell in there. And so when I just, as I always like to do, crunch some numbers, I saw a difference in just trying to figure out what it was.
And I was assuming that 100,000, which is almost 10% of 994, was based on that, not just on the bid of 663.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I read it.
Yeah, but the 190, you have to turn the 100 out.
That has 25.
The 190,000 for the Hadley Courtyard also has professional fees estimated. Again, I'm just trying to come across with a make a recommendation that would be the what's the potential, what the potential cost could be, because everything right now is just an estimate. Nothing has been out to bid, and none of the fees have been set. So I know exactly what that project is going to cost.
Is that with the exception of the light bid, right? And that's, you've already accepted.
Well,
that.
Those fees, that bid is coming at $663,000.
Right.
FGM will base their fees so a certain percentage, somewhere I think between 8 and 9%, based upon that light construction cost.
Okay.
And if there's any other work that I may be in need of, unanticipated, that is typically done under time and materials.
So if I wanted to drill down on the professional fees, you could essentially break that down between engineering fees and architectural fees.
Absolutely, that's the way we receive all the invoices.
Okay, so that would get us probably to what Dan's talked about.
Mm-hmm. And again, I've provided reconciliations for each of our projects now over the past couple of summers in the Hadley, in the Hadley project. So I try to keep pretty close count of what the actual construction dollars are and at what type of professional fees we're incurring also.
But FGM has a standard matrix based on the project cost and the type of work.
That
our architectural fees always fit into that. And that if this is higher than that percentage, you're saying there's actually some other professional work that may be involved with this specific project. It's not FGM raising their rate.
No. I know for a fact that there are extra costs identified with these types of projects, and there'll be engineering costs based upon the fact that the work that's recommending being done this summer will involve some engineering costs that FGM does not perform.
Right.
So, Bob, is it possible we could provide a little bit more specific information about the kinds of other costs that we'll be incurring with the summer projects?
I'll be happy to update the report, but I'll tell you now that they will be architectural costs and engineering costs. Mm-hmm. As I know that today, those are the only two costs that will be associated with the project. unless there were some minor legal work that needed to be done also. Mm-hmm.
So can we talk? Have a little bit of description about the the engineering costs, perhaps, that we that play into what that, that what that means.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. I guess next up we have the Hadley Courtyard renovations.
The Hadley Courtyard renovation is being brought to you for discussion after we initially brought this to you for discussion, probably back in November, maybe. And the discussion that ensued among board members was to try to look again at the project with a lens for creating a more comprehensive outdoor learning environment and something that could be used for multiple reasons outside of the classroom. And so that's what this is about, and I'll let Bob describe the vision of this Hadley project.
Sure. We met with several Hadley groups, teachers, administrators, from the teaching department. We had literacy, we had science, we had math. There was about 8 or 10 of us that gathered in a room, as well as the principal and the assistant principal. And we just started brainstorming in terms of what we think would make for the best learning environment out there. And what we've done is we've sort of isolated 3 different particular areas where children, where students can meet, where staff can meet with students. There'll be an area here for children to meet, which would be in the southeast corner of that courtyard area. You know, to give you the best reference, here's the Hadley Library, mm-hmm. right off here. And here would be a courtyard where the kids would be able to sit, study, read, gather, do whatever they would like to do. There'll be another area. This is actually a lounge here. This is another area which will have some pavers in there where the kids will be able to meet. Then there'll be a small
performing center.
A performing center, yes. A small area. It'll be multi-tiered. And a teacher may be instructing. The children may be doing some sort of presentation, musical presentation, artistic. I don't know exactly what that would be. We did include a small self-circulating stream in there. It was based upon the recommendation of the staff at Hadley. There are some existing trees in here. The existing trees will stay, and then there'll be some shrubbery and just general things to keep the area green and free and clear whatever may happen out there. All of the areas here will be connected by a sidewalk, and as I indicated, at the Finance Committee last time, I fought for this for a couple months, but it looks like I've lost the battle. We're going to have to do some stormwater work there. Mm-hmm. And basically, the stormwater will be held in tubes right in here in this area, either this area here or more than likely in this area here. They're going to make us do some stormwater work there. The estimates are for stormwater to be around
$20,000.
That's for
the village.
The building.
Yeah. Okay.
Anytime we touch a piece of ground, there's going to be stormwater.
Okay.
It also, this plan also addresses all of the water issues that originally was a driver for the courtyard renovation, so that indoor air quality issues could be mitigated, and so that's included in this plan as well.
That's one of the problems that we've had is that this area has been developed 2 or 3 or 4 different times over the past 20 years, and as different staff members or community members, parents, move through the building, the area sort of falls in disrepair. So there are a couple of storm sewers in here. We will have stormwater capabilities within this area. And then if you'll notice along this corner here and this corner here, much of what we had to do on the far east addition of Hadley this summer, we had to install some stormwater tile in there, drain tiles, and that's what had been causing a lot of the issues that we had down in that three-story addition. We weren't getting adequate drainage in there. So we've made a plan now to address those issues ahead of time, so you'll have stormwater
within the facility itself, and then along this wall here, which would be the east wall, and as well as a small portion along the, well, I guess that's the north wall. About 3 feet out from the wall will be stone, and there'll be drain tiles underneath there to eliminate the potential for any type of excess water accumulation. Also, we'll be maintaining this. We don't want a grassy type or flowering type of wildlife out there because of ongoing air quality. This has been a building that we've had problems with over the years.
Bob, are those storm tiles, are they going to be tied into existing toe drains? You know, existing, or are we going to have to put a sump?
No, there will not be a sump in there. We may tie them into the stormwater that goes in here. I can't say that that plan has been definitive yet because we're still working on all over the conceptual drawing is done. Mm-hmm. Sort of the final bid documents and the final drawings and expectations have not been finalized yet. We did some dye testing there this past Friday that found that the drains, the storm sewers that actually exist here, pass underneath the building and end out in the sewers and the driveway right in front of the building. So that's kind of what we know now. We're going along. The reason I can't answer a couple of these questions basically because some of the work that has been done is still undergoing analysis.
So it's not tied in any way to the stormwater detention we installed for the new Hadley classrooms?
Not at all. Not at all. That's completely separate and distinct. Nor is it in any way, shape, or form tied into that sort of little stormwater area in the front of Hadley either. That
so it goes direct to sewer?
It goes directly into a sewer. So, you know, another point, I received a letter in the mail yet this morning, Friday morning, whatever it is that it looks like Glen Ellen will be going forward with that resurfacing project that's going to run along Hawthorne from Glencoe all the way over to Glenbard West. It was in the newspaper. They put a price estimate out there for about $5 million, and it's due to start next summer. Summer of 2012. So we'll have to be doing, it's just a side note, we'll have to be doing some coordinating work like we did with the Franklin project along Bryant Street.
And that's just resurfacing, or are they doing sewer?
No, I think they're taking out sewers. They're complete job, just like they did over Bryant.
No, and they'll start early enough, so it's not an issue with...
I got to tell you, they couldn't have been better partners. When we worked this past summer on Bryant Street, there were some nervous moments. Mm-hmm. But we met frequently. We got everything resolved. Yeah. And the end of the story is, we had kids right in front of school the first day of school. So it really was not an issue. They were great partners. And we seem to have a great working relationship. So this is what they're requiring of me. I went to the mat on it. And nobody was there.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to make some sort of accommodation for stormwater.
Okay, any other questions, discussion? Bring this to a stand.
I got a question. I guess I'm a little surprised when we first talked about this back in November. It was around a $50,000-$60,000 project.
Mm-hmm. I am very surprised with that also, and a lot of it has to do with the design work that we talked about as a group that we put together as a team, and then also the costs that are associated with making this project in line with what the village's expectations are. My original plan was to come out with something very similar that was done over at Franklin last summer with just basically some bench work and things like that. It did not turn out to be that type of project. First of all, this is a junior high school, not an elementary school, and the vision of the staff, to be honest with you, was much different than what we intended the project to be used for over at Franklin. There you might get one classroom of use. Here we're anticipating two, probably three classrooms of use at any given time. So I know that the dollars are more expensive, but I also will draw to your attention that the total estimated projects are about $1 million, and that's what we annually... stone anywhere, but annually that's what we try to do is about $1 million of maintaining our facility.
Well, I guess that's just what I'm struggling with is the large the large dollar amount on something that, you know, there'll be a few months out of the school year that won't be usable. And I prefer to see this put on smart boards or upgraded science labs. I mean, I thought I was shocked when I saw it's $50,000, and now that it's $190,000. And if we have to spend the money, then I'd rather spend it on something that can be used year-round, maybe smart boards or something. That's just right.
Certainly the cost changed when the board asked us to go back and reconsider. The very first design that Bob brought was very basic, just to clean up the area.
It was much different than the project that came
evolved,
as
a
light of the conversation.
And I think the board directed us to reconsider that to make it more of a learning environment, and so you are correct. It did change the cost of the project significantly.
Mm-hmm. I think we all probably looked at the price tag and went, "Whoa, I never thought it would be this much." But the fact is, we kind of back to the drawing board to say we want, you know, if we're going to do it, let's do it the right way. It's not a band-aid. Let's use the space properly. I understand the issue with the smart boards, you know, using something that's 12 months out of the year, but the reality is, in the weather that we have in this area, you never know how long these spaces could be used. And, I mean, you know, we had days last week, they were, 50 degrees, so kids could have been out there, could have gotten some fresh air and used it. I know that you will have a lot of parents very, very happy to see that this space is finally being used for a learning environment, that it's not just a weed receptacle, because that's really all it is right now. And the chance that we have to do it the right way, I'm glad that we're doing it.
To me, this is a project, although it may cost as much as $190,000, there are going to be some minor ongoing costs yearly, but if you look at it, this facility will probably stay in place for a good 20 years.
Yeah.
So over a 20-year period, you're spending less than $10,000 on something that really could be a beautiful learning environment for kids, and for use of staff and community members if necessary.
This is something that's been around for a while. I mean, Dan, just so you know, I mean, I've been approached for several years by the PTA at Hadley, different parent groups wanting to do something with that space and what the capabilities of it are. I mean, again, it's another opportunity for students to get involved in that. We've done so many things with after-school activities at Hadley. It's just another opportunity for them.
It's a shared space that can be used after school, too, whereas, you know, a classroom's a little harder to open up to anyone to use a smart board or something like that. So, you know, it's the building that everyone attends. There's 1,200 students there. Everyone in the district will go to Hadley and get a chance to, you know, use it.
I mean, what essentially is an eyesore now could really become sort of a marquee spot for that building. And we talked about its potential for master facilities. You know, what's going to happen if we do put together there's an agreement on a master facility plan. We've already talked about it with the architects. This area will not be impacted by any type of master facility renovations that would be made at Hadley. This is staying.
But I went back to, you had given us a stack of color pictures for other capital improvement projects. These are the Hadley ones. So this is, you know, looking into the courtyard. I'll show people this. And, you know, I guess there's two issues. I understand your concerns and your observations, Dan. And I think, but I'm not surprised that when the conversation went back to faculty and had a chance to have discussion around it, that it didn't go back to learning environment issues. In particular, and I brought this up before, our science program, which is inquiry-based. And even with this setting, our science teachers go out and try and use it as much as possible. I guess that what I'm thinking about is that kind of amortization of it over years, the usage of it. I thought, to Steve's point about the fact that this is a collective school, meaning everybody ends up in there. And I'm glad to see that you had, you know, science, social studies, literacy, math, even our art space. We could certainly send children out to do artwork, et cetera, when they're doing particular units of study around, you know,
pattern design,
you know, whatever it is. There's just a lot that it can be used. I would I would want to make sure as a board member putting the dollars into it that in fact there are some curriculum plans that are planned to use that space, that it isn't haphazard, oh, let's go use the courtyard, but it's a part of their plan, you know, year on year in terms of building use of the courtyard. And the bottom line is this is a space that's in the center of a building. It's stuck in there, and it's an eyesore, and totally underutilized.
When we finished our meeting, I had a great feeling of what the work that was put together and sensed that feeling of enthusiastic endorsement. It's just the entire group was just excited that finally, after all these years, we could do something to improve sort of this center area of the building. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a major pass-through. The kids use it. Mm-hmm. Our community passes through it day in and day out.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea, to your point, of doing after-school stuff. I mean, that there's an opportunity to be a little bit more creative with the space. I mean, we're lucky as a district that the courtyard in Ben Franklin was supported by...
It was a grant.
I mean, volunteer dollars, labor, the whole bit. I mean, that was a gift to the district at $0. So that's great. You know, I wish we could do the same thing at Hadley. It's not going to happen. And I don't think it's the responsibility of teachers year on year or PTA to keep up physical property. That's our responsibility as a district. So would I like it to come in a little less? Well, sure. I don't disagree with that at all. But I don't see it as a let's hope it gets used. I really see it as an opportunity to plan learning around an environment and building that environment that will have it be utilized, but to challenge that and make sure that
that happens. And I would hope that this project comes in substantially under the price estimate.
Well, you did it on another project, Bob.
So we'll push and
coming
we'll see
under budget.
If that's what we can do again. That would be my goal.
You said there was yearly maintenance costs.
We estimate that it might cost as much as $5,000 a year to have this little stream area drained, winterized, and then any type of landscaping cost if I need someone to go in there and trim bushes or whatever. But very, very minimal ongoing.
We would do that in-house, Bob?
I don't know that I would want to do it in-house.
Mm-hmm. The pond.
Not the pond, the trimming or
trimming.
I would probably just have
your normal
landscape contractor mm-hmm. provide those services. Any other questions?
Okay, that's the end of our discussion items. So next up, upcoming meetings will be in terms of regular board meetings, March 7th at Central Services. We have a regular meeting again on March 21st, and I think we may add a workshop in there, which, of course, we'll publicize well in advance. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time? Okay. Hearing none, again, we have opportunity for public participation at the end of the meeting. Are there any members of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Yes?
I just had a very quick thing to say. I'm Lisa Rudolph here at Lincoln, and I'm also a PTA president here. And I just would love to be a part of the discussion that Sarah alluded to. I was not at the PTA Council today. My son did not speak in the president's day. He was legitimately not here today. But so I would love to be part of the discussion about in this changing internet age of how we are putting in measures to protect the children's images. We have had, you know, I think it's pretty noticeable that newspapers today are going increasingly internet, or you know, either print or internet or uniquely internet. And how do we just, you know, maybe take a look at possibly revise both at the PTA level and at the school level and figure out if we're supposed to be differentiating, because I'm actually not 100% sure on that. Just so that we all maintain what we all agree is most important, which is our children's safety. So mm-hmm. I don't want to take a lot of your time, but I would love to be a part of that discussion. Julie Worthen was kind enough to talk to me by phone today about it. And one of the issues that we're crossing here is that we had a science night event here, and cash.com came, and it's not the first time they have. And I don't mean to point them out as an example, but we ended up with about 25 or 26 photos that were online
And it just sort of, I think it was just the moment where we all sort of came together and thought that the second only on the PTA, gosh, you know, what are our responsibilities here? And a couple of our children are on there. I know personally, I don't put my children on Facebook. I don't have my children online anywhere. It's just a personal choice that I make. But I know that as stewards of you know, committee and also as a parent, I'm personally, you know, concerned about doing right by our families and also, you know, personal concern as a parent, that we're just making sure that we're keeping up with what's happening, because I don't think the vast majority of parents, you know, are aware and have thought through the fact that their photo, you know, what used to maybe be a benign photo at science night could very well mean that their child is, their, you know, which is now a teacher. So I just think it must be
okay.
That perhaps District 41 information is, you know, was information by information, authorization, photo information that we find, you know, is a K-5 scenario. So as long as you sign it in kindergarten, and then unless you update it, it's not against you to grade. Obviously, in that period of time, a lot can change. So just in the interest of keeping up with what's going on and making sure that we're all kind of either on the same page, and where I need to kind of go through the channels of PTA and figure out best practices.
I was going to say, yeah, I would suggest talking to Billy, because I think that was the discussion is starting there, and then we'll have a discussion and try to make sure that we're all on the same page, and both legally and morally is the right word, but about protecting the kids and making sure that we're all on the same page. So I would talk to her, and that discussion will come up again next month at PTA Council.
Okay, and I'm actually going to attend the Illinois PTA Convention in March, the weekend of the 11th, 12th, 13th. And they often have technology types of seminars. Often what they surround, they're surrounded by safety, artificial work on the internet, and the use of the news and the center. But, you know, I'd like to take it a step farther and make sure that we're protecting images. The way you do the copyright artwork, you know, we obviously, the copyright artwork of proprietary material, we obviously want to make sure we're doing the same for our students.
Okay.
Thank you.
I had
a similar question back when we were at Churchill, and Scott was giving his presentation on that, the Ming and all that, and there was the talk about the flips that they'd been provided, and that's not really an externally available group on the internet. It's more of a group of professionals, but, you know, I know we have a policy around that, but how does it deal with kind of professional use, if you will? If you're taking flips of your classroom, can you post those online without written permission, if it's only going to be other professionals, or, you know, how does, once anything goes on the internet, it's there, someone can get to it.
Okay.
So, you know, I know we have a policy around it, but I didn't know how that dealt with kind of a closed internet community.
Well, it's something we probably, Julie and I just had this conversation today, that we may want to, in our policy review, skip, you know, whatever the next chronological section is, and jump to 7 to take a look at section 7, which would really revisit some of those policies that may need to have significant updating.
Oh, we still have Eric and Dan.
I'll set up a meeting with you.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, great. So the board has determined we do not have a need to adjourn to closed session, so may I have a motion to adjourn the February 21st, 2011 regular meeting.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.